Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. What's your definition of the greatest job in the world? Our next guest defines it as a way you can pursue your dreams, help others, and have a little fun along the way. Dr. William Elmquist is a distinguished professor of pharmaceutics at the University of Minnesota. Today, he's the keynote speaker for the 27th annual Pharmacy Fall Convocation at SDSU. His talk is called Targeted Central Nervous System Delivery to Treat Brain Tumors, Many Challenges, Many Opportunities, which means Dr. Elmquist's vision of the perfect job has the potential to save lives and change the world of medicine. He joins us now from Brookings. Dr. Elmquist, welcome.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
So explain to us now, are you speaking to pharmacy students? Is that who is in the audience for this?
The audience today will be the first 3 years of the pharmacy students, the P1, P2, and P3 students, and also will include faculty and graduate students here at SDSU.
So your role is to inspire and encourage them as well as give them some information, right?
Right. So today's lecture will be really related to inspiring. I will discuss my definition, as you pointed out, of the world's greatest job, which obviously I'm thinking is my job. And then tomorrow I will have the lecture, the scientific lecture, which will be more related to the specific work we're doing in brain tumors.
Perfect. Thank you for clarifying that. Let's talk about the inspiration first, and then let's get into a little bit of what you're doing there at the University of Minnesota. Not everybody can say that they think their job is the best job in the world. I feel that about my job. But some people who are listening are like, yeah, not so much. How do you know that you've found the place where you can really, say that you're where you need to be?
As I mentioned in the news item, that I think the greatest job is that where you can have fun. And many jobs you can have fun. Maybe it's really related to your attitude towards your job, but can have a lot of fun in many jobs. And what really sets it apart is having a job that allows you to help many, many people all at the same time. So I'm looking at my job as an opportunity to really make a difference in society, because obviously these tumors are very deadly, and there is not a good treatment option, and we're looking into changing that and changing it sooner than later.
What's fun for you? And what's your definition of fun?
I can tell you what's fun. One is discovery. Those of us who are true scientists are just so excited and have such fun with discovery. Especially discoveries that are useful, and so it's kind of like my job in some ways is like being a detective, and so I am gathering data and information, and I'm working with other people, and we're trying to find a solution to a problem that has eluded others. And so it's an exciting and fun endeavor.
And all right, let's talk about. Go ahead.
Let's talk. I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
Let's talk about what the challenges are then. Why is it so difficult to find a treatment and to get what needs to get to the specific tumor inside the brain?
Yeah.
What's
so
the barrier?
Part of it is related to. The blood-brain barrier, and the blood-brain barrier is comprised of the endothelial cells, or the capillaries that go through our brain, the blood capillaries, and they're unique capillaries because they're designed to protect the brain from bad things in the blood. So they also, unfortunately, at the same time, will keep our therapies from going across the blood-brain barrier into the brain. And what is interesting to me, and I think where we've made the greatest impact, is the fact that up until maybe 5 years ago, especially when we started to try to educate the scientific and medical community about this problem, is that it was felt that delivery to the brain tumors was not, delivery of the drug to the brain tumors was not an issue, was not really the problem. The problem was not having the right drug. And so we have tried to educate the community that even though in the tumor, you can see the tumor on what is called MRI or magnetic resonance imaging, it is important to recognize that there are areas of the tumor that are still protected by a blood-brain barrier, areas that are broken down and areas that are still protected. So it is imperative we get drug to all of the tumor cells. So if there are any that are remaining, then we are unable to really make much of an inroad. And so that's really one of the exciting things to me is helping educate the medical community on what is a very fundamental problem.
Explain that just a little bit more deeply, because I'm not sure I fully understand. Are there parts of the tumor that you can't see on the MRI and that you need to understand are there?
That's exactly it. And
okay.
Most of these tumors are very invasive, so they have a central core, which in the central core you may have the blood-brain barrier break down, which is then visible on MRI. But there are areas where the tumor exists that you can't see by MRI. And the magnetic resonance imaging guides the surgeon.
Oh, I see.
In the tumor. Now, almost all the time, I would say greater than 90% of the time, we have a situation where you remove the tumor and you may buy the patient two or three extra months. And to me, that is unacceptable. That's not very effective. And we need to, not only with surgery, we need to optimize our pharmacotherapy, in other words, the use of drugs for these tumors.
Do the drugs exist if you can get to them to the right spot?
You know, that's a good question because we don't know that yet. Because heretofore, if the drug fails, the question is, why did it fail? Is it because it didn't get there, or is it because it's not the right drug for that tumor? The two issues, I think, for these brain tumors that we need to deal with are drug delivery to the tumor, to the areas of the tumor that are not visible on our imaging techniques, and two, the fact that the tumors are so different from one another genetically, which means many of our current agents, which are based on the genetics of the tumor, may work for some of the cells, but not all of the cells. And it's a kind of a basic tenet in cancer chemotherapy is you have to hit all the cells in order to make effective difference.
Are we able to do the genetic sequencing on brain tumors in the same way that we expect as patients it to be done in other tumors?
The answer is generally yes, because we are able to remove the tumor, resect the tumor on surgery, and that tumor is then basically submitted to pathology for genetic characterization. An important aspect of my work that I've been collaborating with the Mayo Clinic on is using imaging techniques that might be representative of genetic of the genetic makeup of the tumor. So there's very high content or high parameter MRI that can be done that helps us understand from imaging what the genetic makeup of the tumor is. So this could be also an important aspect in the future.
We just have a couple minutes left, Dr. Elmquist, and I'm wondering, I know you've done quite a bit of work with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's as well. Would you like to talk about sort of the potential and the future and the impact we're seeing on those diseases?
Well, much of the work I've done that can impact those diseases are simply related to various factors that limit drug delivery for any disease to the CNS, central nervous system, or the brain. And so much of what I've done also impacts neurological AIDS or neuroAIDS, HIV. Sure. So any disease that occurs in the brain tissue, the work that you do on the blood-brain barrier can have an impact. One of the things that we're looking at is transport systems in the brain that may transport drugs actively out of the brain. So if we had found a active drug for Alzheimer's or an active drug for Parkinson's, we see that there is a an opportunity to improve what we call the brain bioavailability, or the amount of drug that gets to the brain, to improve that by inhibiting something that pumps it back out of the brain. And as you know, these neurodegenerative diseases are becoming more and more important in the U.S. and across the world. And we need to find the many factors that influence drug action. Drug delivery across the blood-brain barrier is just one of those factors.
I'm always curious, when I talk to researchers and scientists, what sort of mindset you bring into the lab on a daily basis, beyond just the doing the work that's right in front of you. What kind of mindset do you use to keep yourself open to seeing something in a whole new way that no one has seen before?
Yeah, well, this is essentially what one of the definitions of research is to see what everyone else has seen, but think what no one else has thought. And that was a quote from one of our Nobel laureates about 50 years ago. But nonetheless, my mindset is to have an open mind, trying to appreciate really also all the people that are helping me. No one person does this on their own. And so what we do is we have many discussions, we have many lab meetings. I meet with collaborators, physicians, graduate students, and we find that if we have all an open mind in our lab meetings and such, it's more likely we can hit on a positive result. So it's been a tremendous career for me.
Dr. William Elmquist, he's a distinguished professor of pharmaceutics at the University of Minnesota. He's in Brookings today and tomorrow. Dr. Elmquist, thank you so much.
Thank you.